It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why people keep telling you that you're metaphorical gin and juice.
I still don't get it.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, just deal.
Okay.
I'm so annoyed I have to turn off the air conditioning for this. It's going to get really hot.
Do you think?
I guess today's not as bad as some days, but yeah, I suspect by the end I'm going to be unhappy.
Okay.
And there she goes. First on air, kitty puke. Just let people enjoy that for a minute. Soak it in, so to speak.
What, is she sick?
You never know. Ezzy has always had an extremely sensitive tummy.
Yeah, sometimes she doesn't know and stuff.
And frequently it's just, like, emotional. So it's possible that her little brother's just getting to her. Because they're at a weird point. Like, everybody's accepted that everybody lives here.
Mm.
But they're still not exactly happy about it. But then there's weird things like Ezzy will play with him.
Mm.
Like, she will come over and check him out. And then, like, she'll bat at him and run away and he'll chase her and, like, that kind of thing. But the entire time she's hissing at him.
Oh, so she herself can't figure out.
She's acting like she's mad, but she's still engaging him, like, in a fun way, so I don't even know. And he's a baby. We all fucking hate him right now, because he's a baby, and babies are dumb, and babies just cry all the time, and want to claw you, and bite your face, and so, you know, he's a lot, he doesn't know any better, but
he's very active. I mean,
he really is.
We had a lot of cats around the farm, and some of them were active, but some of them weren't. I mean, you know, they'd run around, but a lot of times they'd lay around too. But every
both
time
of
I'm
his
here, this cat's always moving.
Both of his living siblings here were pretty crazy when they were little.
Okay.
Although it keeps getting topped. Twiglet was nuts, and I was like, wow. And then when we got Ezzy, I'm like, wow. Twiglet was nothing compared to this. And now I'm like, oh my god. Now, to be fair, Twiglet was 14 years ago. But Ezzy's our most recent acquisition of cat before Addie here. And she was quite a few weeks older than he is when we got her. So she was much more of a little kid cat. He's a baby cat. So he does just a lot of things because he's just trying stuff out and he doesn't know. Like, in his first few days here, not afraid at all of the other cats. If they go, he'd just walk up and, like, bat at their hand. Now, if one of them goes, he has the good sense to, like, back up and arch his back a little bit. And he's not, like, really scared, but he understands these are other things being aggressive toward me.
Did he scratch you?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, there. There. Biting my face was not some sort of metaphor, like the gin and juice thing. No, he bite my face. He likes to. In fact, I was a little okay with it when he would bite my cheek, but he like then hangs from it, and that's not good. But the other one, and I don't know how he does this, because his whole thing with biting me is he's like 3 feet away and he just stares at me, and it's adorable with his little baby eyes, and he's so sweet. And then in one giant leap, he just runs at me, and he's gotten to where he can catch one of my lips in his teeth from a jump, and that sucks. On the other hand, there was the time that he ran at me and just headbutted the side of my neck, and that was hilarious. He's on the other side of the couch, and he just goes, dun 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 bonk, with his head, and then just lay there on my shoulder. I was like, you really did not think that through. Nothing happened.
You're a crazy cat, Gus.
Exactly. He's a nut job. And I swear, if he was a little less cute, wouldn't keep him around, but he's so fucking cute. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast at gmail.com. except it's not. But the only podcast in the... Oh, my God.
What's the matter?
As he puked, he ate it, and now he's trying to bury the spot where he ate the puke, while still eating more of it, but burying it. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The only podcast in the world that would tell you that. let's stick with that one. Other podcasts don't talk about in-progress burying of eaten puke.
I hope none of our listeners are eating their lunch or something.
But, well, it hits at a good climax, though, because this is Twiggly's thing. Twiggly will eat anything. Twiggly will eat puke of other kitties. And to the degree that you saw when she started making pukey noises, he ran to her rescue.
He ran, yeah.
This culminated the
like,
best
like
time.
Someone opening a tuna can.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Weird.
But that's what's hilarious is so one time, as he's sitting on the couch arm and starts making those noises, and Twiglet runs in. Oh, yeah, they're having issues right now. I think Ezzy's just in a bad mood tonight. But so Twiglet runs in because she's going to puke. But she's up on the arm of the couch, and he runs over. He's really excited, and she literally pukes on his head. And we're all like, you deserve that. It's a disgusting habit. It's exploitative. Yeah, I think she's in a mood tonight. I don't know.
Yeah, but...
Addie is hiding under
Gus
William.
Gus really wants to...
Well, as he's over.
No, you're not coming up here.
Bitching.
I'm not helping you. No.
Climb his legs like,
no.
like a ramp.
I know what you want to do. You want Ezzy to look the other way so you can pounce, but she won't do it. So now you're thinking, maybe if I attack from the top.
Tonight, she actually chased him at one point. So I think he's having second thoughts about a lot
of
stuff.
No, I think he is.
Because that I hadn't seen that before. She chased him for a little ways. He was like, oh, shit.
No. He's thinking of another strategy. He wants to use me, but it ain't going to happen.
I just encourage whoever's winning at the time. When she runs away, I'm like, go get her. But then when she was chasing him, I was like, go get him.
Wow.
I'm Tony.
Oh, and I'm William. This is episode... Uh-oh. 275?
Well done. Your
See,
one job is complete. You can go home
I
now.
Didn't
Your
remember,
check will be in the mail.
And Tony actually checked for me beforehand, so I'm kind of trusting Tony.
And I wasn't even going to tell.
Well, you know, you...
Wow.
You have your... Cat puke confessions. I have my. I don't remember the number of confessions.
He's really on the. He's going after her.
So 275.
For those of you just joining us, thank you for sticking around this many minutes just to find out what the hell this show is. Here's how it works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and people like yourselves email that address. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, that sort of thing. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its Ecuadorian servants, draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show. Seriously, you had an out and you went after him? You are such a lying little bitch. You are making this shit up. She's been doing this all day. Oh, I hate him. Then stop following him. Stop walking up and sniffing his butt. She's such a liar. And he's very confused because he's not used to deceptive people.
He'll figure it out.
We're going to be gone. Well, Trish is already gone, but I'm going to meet her this weekend. And so the Lamberts is... sorry. The friends of ours had to come over to learn about the new cat. They fed our other cats, but they had to learn about the new cat. Because his eating is more complicated.
I see.
Yeah, so it's been 2 weeks
because
I was sick again because I'm always sick.
Yeah,
sometimes I like to look at the veins on my feet. I have very pronounced veins on my feet. And you know who else has? And I realized this like a year ago. My father. My feet basically look like my father's feet at this point.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird. Because, I mean, I bear a large resemblance to him in general. But this is one that, like, if it was just a picture of my foot out of context, I could confuse it with his. Like, they really look alike.
I most resemble my mom.
In feet, you mean?
In in facial features.
Whose feet do you look like?
And,
or,
well...
Wait.
some people...
I like that. Whose feet do you look like? Your face is the spitting image of a mid-era George Burns feet. Like, oh God times. Like, right in the hot spot there.
A lot of people say I look like my maternal grandfather, but, mom also resembled him quite a bit, so...
There was a picture of my father when he was, like, 6 or 7. And keep in mind, that would have been, like, 49 or 50. 1949 or 50. So, it's like a black and white photo or something. But other than the fact that his ears stuck out, and the fact that there's no... Like, I wouldn't have recognized this scenario, I would have said that was a picture of me. I would honestly have said that was a picture of me at that age. So that was kind of weird to see. But there's a great picture from when we went out for my dad's 80th birthday. We went out to lunch that day, one of the days we were there. And so my dad is sitting next to my brother, is sitting next to me. And it's kind of eerie. Which is weird, because I get a lot from my mom also. Mm. But yeah, like in that context, you can just really see it. All right, so 2 weeks... And so, what's been going on?
Well,
with you, I know what's been going on in the world. I don't like it.
Me neither.
It's been really bad.
Yeah,
like, which I don't fully understand, because, as has been pointed out many times, we've been through so many of these now, and they all. This one was a little closer to home because I found out way late. I found out like Monday morning because I don't pay any attention to news. But then I found out where, and I realized that I had a gay friend who had recently moved to Orlando and was single. Mm. And I was like, holy shit. Mm. But I found out they were... I didn't think so, because I'm like, they're not kind of the clubbing type. But I was like... But and they were like 10 minutes away from there is where they live, though, and stuff.
Wow.
So, I mean, in that sense, it was more personal. But I don't think that's it. It's just... There's a very last straw vibe to this. I'm just fucking sick of it. And yeah, I feel like there's a lot of that.
Yeah, there are a lot of things about it that, I mean, it's so many people.
Yeah.
So much of it was captured with devices while it was happening. Yeah. There's that. There's the fact that a somewhat marginalized group was targeted.
I feel like that's the thing. We have a clear, not that we have a clear picture, but we have a clearer picture of the motive and the like we understand more who this person was, why they did this, at least why they said they did, what was involved. There's still questions, but I feel like in a lot of them it's like we have no fucking clue.
I think the fact that it's being regarded as a terrorist act also has something to do with it.
Yeah,
you know, because that kind of feeds into what you were just saying, that, well, we know, we, you know, we feel like we know why it happened, what the motivations were.
Or at least on the surface level.
Right, and it's, you know, it's functioning on two levels. You know, some of these things, when they happen, you think the person just, you know, they just snap. They're just crazy, and there's no reason. And that's frightening and scary, and really that's probably... That's probably still true. I mean, just because the person...
It's still not... I mean, with certain exceptions that I don't feel like going into, it's not like somebody could have seen this one.
Well, right. And it's still... You know, it's still kind of the same thing. But as soon as someone says that it was religiously motivated or terrorist motivated, well, suddenly, psychologically, we feel more comfortable... feeling like we know why it happened.
Yeah,
and understand.
Well, and that's a thing people have talked about too. Yeah, so if you're a Muslim and you shoot people, it's a terrorist act. If you're a Christian and you shoot people, it was just craziness, or it was I forget. But if you ever look at the news reports, they always use a different word.
Right.
But terrorism whenever it's a Muslim involved.
Yep. So. Yeah.
There's also one if it's black people. There's one for Muslims, there's one for black people, and then there's one for white people. And I forget what they are. But, what is the one they used for Baltimore the last time? It's not protesting, it's rioting, basically.
I don't know.
But But anyway, sorry. That's a not useful tangent. If none of you have, well, and you also, William, let me digress here slightly. I am discovering Samantha Bee is a goddamn phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. I never was particularly into her. When she was on The Daily Show, she was fine, she made me laugh, but, I mean, to me, she was an and also amongst Daily Show correspondents. Okay. I was like, yeah, I remember her. And I'd seen her in a couple other things, and just not my cup of tea. Holy shit. I mean, the first thing, and this is very similar to the experience I had with Amy Schumer not long ago, but I'd say even stronger. She is not compromising anything in terms of her politics, in terms of her feminism. She is saying what she believes. It's very similar to what John Oliver is doing, which I also love. But it feels even more genuine from her. He's talking about very serious things that need to be talked about. He's doing great stuff. You can always tell sort of the joke is the point to it.
Mm.
I feel like she's out there because she's really got some shit to say. Anyway, that's the thing. I happened to catch an episode of her show and I was like, oh my God. But
I liked her a lot in The Daily Show. And when I heard she had her own thing, I really wanted to see it, but I don't have an opportunity to watch it.
Well, you can watch it in bits and pieces on YouTube and stuff like that.
I suppose that's true.
And not like illegally. They have a channel and they post stuff. And to that end, then you haven't seen this, I'll tell you. The episode that she did right after the shooting, which would have been this Monday night or this Tuesday night,
okay.
Presumably already had a bunch of stuff set up. So most of the episode was not about it. But the beginning was, and in particular her monologue, which was about 7 minutes, was.
Mm.
And everyone owes it to themselves to watch that.
Hmm.
It's amazing. It actually gives me hope for humanity, which I never have anymore. And it's, well, I mean, it's serious. I'll put it this way. I saw Stephen Colbert's response on his show after I saw Samantha Bee's.
Hmm.
Had I seen it before, I would have been like, oh, that was really well said. That was good. And having seen her thing, I was like, yeah, that's kind of trite and empty and sounds like everybody else.
Wow.
Because, I mean, she's really talking about this whole, you know, we're all like, oh, let's pray, let's love, let's be, or, you know, we could also do some shit and we could also say how mad we are about this.
Right.
So everybody should watch it, is what I'm saying. It's amazing. And at one point early on, she says, how about instead of jokes, I just scream for 7 minutes until we go to commercial? No? Okay. And I almost believed that, like, if she thought she could get away with it, she would. She is genuinely, furiously angry and still incredibly well-spoken. I'm sure because it was written beforehand. I'm not trying to say that this was some spontaneous moment or anything, but it feels incredibly genuine. It's really brilliant. It's still pretty funny because she doesn't not tell jokes. I would highly recommend it. And in general, I would highly recommend the show.
Well, if John Oliver's show also has a channel, you know, and you can. Yeah.
We watch that. We're behind one because Trisha's gone, but pretty much Monday evening often our first viewing is the last week.
Yeah, and it's just their main 20-minute bit. You know, you don't see all the segments of the show. But if she's got something like that, well, I'll look for it and I'll subscribe, and that way I can watch it.
Mm.
But I didn't know. I didn't know that she had anything like that on YouTube.
I found out because I tweeted about how much that moved me, and in the process I tagged her, and I in the process they're like, how about this other Twitter that's her TV show? And I was like, sure. And so then I'm browsing through those, and there she links most of the clips. Like, in the episode I saw, I'm pretty sure she's linked three videos that are the episode.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And yeah, it's on, like, TBS, which is weird to me. But, you know, whoever goes for it. But yeah, really, really impressed.
What else do you have to say about your week? 2 weeks? Cause that's not a long much. Time. You didn't do very much?
No, I finished Tropico. I mean, I should rephrase that. I beat Tropico. I beat the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really weird campaign. Time travel gets involved. It's very odd. But I'm not done with it because I'm playing in the sandbox for it. Mm. With a giant tropical island and unlimited money.
Mm.
And wow, you can build a really happy society when you have unlimited money.
Yeah, I guess you probably could.
Although, it's not guaranteed. In fact, I believe the last time I was playing, I'm down to like 58% happy. And before I was like at 81, which was the highest I'd ever managed and that kind of thing. And I'm like, I can't figure out why. I'm looking at all the stats and everything. I'm like, I don't know why they're unhappy. So I'm still not sure why they're not happier. So that kind of thing can happen. I had that during the campaign. I had a thing where their food rating was bad. And I'm like, they have so much food. And then I realized, basically, a very elaborate production line I had created on accident had stopped. Oh. Because what had happened was I had goats and cows that were making milk that then were making into cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But I had changed I had basically upgraded the ranches. So now I had to give them corn to produce the goats and cows. And I didn't have nearly enough corn on the island for that. And so what corn there was, the people were just eating.
Oh.
And so, consequently, we were getting no more food from the corn, except the little bit that was worth. Nothing from the goats or the cows in terms of milk or meat. And, of course, no cheese, because the creamery was stuck. And I was like, oh. So then I had to work really... At first, I was just planting tons of corn. But as you, as an Iowa farmer, may know, that's not super effective by itself.
See?
So eventually...
It's complicated.
So eventually I had to import some. And when it came back, it came back. Like, suddenly my food was at, like, 98% of maximum. I'm like, yeah, well, no. When everything works. But, yeah, and I haven't been playing that one a lot. I'm probably going to be done with it pretty soon. But we'll see. The book is... stalled.
Oh, is it?
I have written once since we last talked about it 2 weeks ago, and effectively I have written nothing. What I wrote was maybe 100 words, and it just wasn't, it's not, I even know the scene, but the words are not gelling right now.
Yeah,
so I think I'm gonna have to dig deep and be like, write it even if it's dumb as hell.
Oh, it's to get past it.
I think that may be what the problem is. I had a pretty good run of being in the zone and feeling like this is good story, this is good wording, this is good dialogue. And now I'm not feeling that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's where the editing's going to be. And I'm also, I came to a recent realization, which is going to sound really stupid, because it's obvious when you say it, but I think it's intimidating me a little bit, because I realized, here's how it was going to go in my head.
Okay.
I was going to write this draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was going to go through it again and basically just clean up the really obvious shit that didn't make sense, you know, obvious things that just a pass-through would be like, of course. And then I was going to give it out to people and start having them edit it.
Sure.
That's not how it's going to work.
No?
No. I'm going to finish this. Then I'm going to have to read the whole thing from the start, which for me takes a while.
Okay.
Then I'm probably going to rewrite a ton of it. I'm essentially going to do a new version of it that I'm sure will drastically alter stuff, because there's shit that doesn't make sense. There's already new stuff I've thought about to add in, mm-hmm. things like that. So I'm going to write almost the whole thing again, practically, mm-hmm. although with a much clearer sense of what's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And that may happen 2 or 3 times before I ever get near other people.
Mm.
So I'm like, suddenly there's this way bigger chunk that I didn't even think about in there. I did it again. I just like coughing on you, apparently.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so that may have been a little bit scary for me, but it's not dead. It's definitely not dead. I've got an even clearer story that I want to tell now, so I'm not just... Well, I am still making shit up while I go along, but like, it has turned into a story that I now need to tell. So.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. I'll probably be sending you a file that I want you to read here pretty soon.
Okay.
I've got to proof it a couple more times to feel like...
Did I ever ready. Actually respond to you about your shadow script?
Nobody did that I know of. I sent it to a couple people and nobody said
anything. A lot of it was lazy. I read it way later after you sent it to me.
Well, I take it back. My wife read it and responded to it. But.
It was weird. This is probably dumb shit to talk about on the air, but most of our friendship's on the air, so. I was not super fond of it. And I think I was trying to spend, because this was the first time, I mean, I've edited your stuff before, and there's been things, but it's probably also different when it's a big honking novel. I can totally say, like, this scene is crap, because I can say I like the rest of it, but when it's a smaller thing, I'm like, if, because it was like just some sort of underlying things to it, I'm like, and I even could sort of like see what you were going for, but I'm like, it's just really not. And I think I was trying to work up the courage to do that, and then it becomes that thing where I'm embarrassed because I'm nervous about criticizing to that degree, and I'm also embarrassed because I've taken so damn long.
Oh.
And so it all kind of...
Well, you don't have to be embarrassed about any of those things.
I know, but it feels weird.
I don't mind being criticized. I don't mind it being late. I would prefer...
You would probably feel weird if I gave you my novel and you thought it was super shitty. You would probably have a hard time telling me that. Wait, sorry, which is not to imply that I think your script was super shitty.
That's not what I mean.
Just saying a level can exist at which that becomes
right. I would prefer, I mean, I don't have any problem with someone saying, yeah, this isn't working. That's fine. Because that's exactly what I want to hear if that's the case. I would prefer if they had some idea of why it wasn't working.
Yeah.
Maybe some suggestions of what could make it work. Because it is kind of, it doesn't bother me or hurt my feelings when someone says it's not working, but it frustrates me
when you don't have a thing. Yeah,
yeah. If that's all they and say, and I'm like, mean that's all you got? You're just going to tell me it's not working because that doesn't help me.
It's.
But I'm not bothered at all that they say that. I'm bothered that now I don't know what to do. It just doesn't work. I'm not just going to throw the thing away. I've got to fix it, but now I don't know how to fix it because you can't even tell me why it's not working.
The real short answer, and keep in mind, I am weeks away from it now. It styles like a genuine old-timey radio drama.
Sure.
And it's full of content that is incredibly anachronistic to that. There's a lot of, as is often the case in your stuff, there's a lot of, sometimes disguised, sometimes not, philosophical discussion within it.
Okay.
That just, to me, doesn't suit that pulpy genre that we're clearly going for.
Hmm.
It's trying to sort of be low and high at the same time. But the problem is that's a really broad explanation. If you want to sit down with it sometime, I can do a little better. I assume you probably haven't touched it for a while yourself.
No,
I
haven't because I've been working on
other things. But if you want to sit down with it sometime, I can talk about that. Okay. I think I saw the file this morning going through something on my computer and it reminded me of it.
Because a lot of the issues that they talk about are issues people were talking about at the time, but
not in pulp dramas.
No, I know that. That's true.
And that, well, and you're going to run into both. In this case, I think you're hitting a genre issue, but you're also going to hit a situation where, because what there isn't in this particular style is sort of realism. And I feel like you're injecting a great deal of that.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And
that's a problem?
It doesn't work here. I'd have to look at it more, but it might be a problem of the concept. I don't know. Because, yeah, there's just an association with that genre. Because, I mean, it's not like the time period where pulp was big didn't have more highbrow things, more philosophical things, more reflective bits of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But not in that style.
Okay.
Not in something where the shadow is foiling the crimes and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're
saying. Also, really got to up the racism if you want verisimilitude. Something that there's got to be some character that's a huge racist stereotype of a black person or an Asian person.
Well, I'm not going to do that.
Give them a ridiculous name that would never be a real name, but then play it straight, like never call out the joke.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not gonna do that.
Gotta make it big in this town.
Well, the file that I have ready to go probably is like it's written as a TV pilot script, whether that's how it ever comes to fruition. I don't know, but that's how it's written. And maybe it's good.
Well, I certainly don't think it's not salvageable. But like I said, it was just some sort of underlying bits that I'm like, we may have to do a little bit of tear down here.
That's fine.
Whereas in the past, with your stuff, it was always like, this section. Like, I never was like, the story doesn't work, or, you know, the setting is right. I was always like, this scene feels odd, or this right. dialogue is weird. Right. Or, how do you misspell the, you idiot? I had to move those so I could plug the thing in, so he's never seen those out there. Addie's playing with some window screens that just tried to kill him, and it shocked him. I've seen a bunch of movies. I feel like something should have been worth mentioning. I saw a weird horror film called Nurse that I liked a lot.
Nurse.
It's very like trashy and exploitative, but it's quite self-aware and not like parodying itself, but there's just the whole thing is just slightly over the top in like a clever way. Like, what a lot of truly horrible comedies think they're doing, you know? And like, we're being so ridiculous, it's fun. No. Like, this one, like, every aspect, it was dealing with a lot of common tropes and themes, and it just, they were just in Technicolor.
Oh, okay.
Sort of ridiculously so. It's arguably a sort of single white female story about a nurse serial killer whose whole thing is she acts really sexy and slutty and gets naked a lot so that she can kill cheating men, specifically cheating men, any men that have been unfaithful to anyone. Like, she kills them to make the world a better place and stuff. But they play up the femme fatale angle just ridiculously. And so it's kind of silly. And it stars Paz de la Huerta, who I love, and who's fucking gorgeous. And I don't remember the actress's name, but she's the one that played Suri on 30 Rock. And it's very weird to see her in any other role.
Why does she have to be a nurse?
That's part of it. I think there's... I don't know. Well, I believe the backstory is when she went through the trauma that made her this way, some nurse was very supportive of her. Mm. But there's definitely this element of also the nurse is, you know, very helpful and also very sexy and all this, and so it fits very much in the mold. And oh, it also has Judd Nelson in it because his life is sad now. So, very gory. So that's a plus or a minus for whoever's considering that. What are you doing? Oh, is there something in your mouth? He was just like nodding enthusiastically. He was like, "You are correct. I'm a cat, and even I know that's a thing about horror movies." No, he's trying to chew something in his mouth. Huh, somebody's calling on the phone, but we can't answer it, because it's a podcast, bitches! Well, we talked to her a long time for not much happening in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. We just finished binge-watching The Blacklist.
Ooh! How are you feeling about that?
No, third season was pretty weak, I thought.
Well, from what I could tell in bits and pieces, third season really departed from its original premise, didn't it?
I guess. I don't know. It seemed like a very typical situation where your female lead goes through a pregnancy in real life, and you, the showrunner, just have no idea how to handle it.
You just put her behind the counter with grocery bags. I've seen that's how Kate and Allie did it.
And also, the show is so much like Alias, it's not even funny. I mean, like, everything that happens is...
That makes me feel terrible about Alias. I never watched it, but I always assumed it was good.
Well, it's okay. Alias was watched in our house. So, that's the only reason I know anything about it. I didn't really watch it. I always tried to find something else to do. But, you know, you can't help but kind of know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing how many things happen in this show that's like, oh, wow, that's just like Alias. And that's not a compliment. But, I mean...
But it does have one thing Alias never had. James Spader in a hat. Only goddamn reason to watch that show.
And his character is very interesting.
Oh, fascinating. And his performance of said character is amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like that character in Blacklist, not that James Spader hasn't done some amazing things in his career, but I feel like watching him on the Blacklist, I'm like, this is what it was leading to. All the James Spader shit, including the years as the heartthrob lead and all that stuff, I'm like, all of them were just leading up to Red.
Yeah, well,
because I could feel just the multitudes of his decades of acting thrown in here. Red could easily, in his younger days, have been one of James Spader's characters in his younger days. He could have been the guy from Ally McBeal, for crying out loud.
Well, his performance is really good, and there's a lot of great moments with his character. The rest of the show is kind of silly. I mean, it's amazing.
Did I not say? Back when I was watching it and you weren't, I said he is exactly the only reason to watch that show.
I mean, you know, all the
hated her.
All the people on the list, whenever they talk about who they are and where they came from, it sounds like, you know, supervillain origin stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so weird. And I understand there is a comic book now, and it's like, yeah, this should be based on a comic book the way it's written. And all the other characters, like the female lead, not very compelling.
Hated her.
The
really didn't like the husband for a lot of reasons, many of which are spoilery, so I won't talk about it, but didn't like the husband at all.
And then there's the sort of the archetypical Boy Scout guy who...
Oh, who's an archetypical Boy Scout guy.
Yeah, very two-dimensional.
I've seen that character in so many things. I can see it in so many more. One of the characters I loved the most... and in fact, I almost want to say that within an episode or so of this, I said to Trish, I was like, I really like this character. They're doing stuff. Got killed. Pretty early, because I stopped watching pretty early.
But, I mean, obviously we watched 3 seasons of it, binge watched 3 seasons of it, so we must have liked something about it.
Binge watching is a thing, though. That's how I got to be a Project Runway fan. When you stick something in front of you and watch that many episodes... you develop a vision of the character. Unless the show is so horrifically bad that they can't maintain a character through multiple episodes, you develop an image in your head of the character, and then you start empathizing, and you start doing the, that's a very strange thing for them to do, or that is so them, or things like that, and you start to actually a little bit give a damn. I've found it in so many shows where, like, years later, I'm like, why the hell did I care about their relationship?
Yeah, well, I should only binge watch shows, because when I watch shows, like, when they air, that's fun and everything, but I often forget what happened.
It's hard, it didn't used to be, but almost nobody goes episodic anymore, which is why Trish and I frequently, we have our stable of half-hour comedies and things like that, for a time when we're like, I don't want to have to think too hard about what happened and what's going on. Right. Let's watch a half-hour show. And so we do that because it's such a pain in the ass. Yeah, and it's too much commitment. We are many episodes behind on Winona, and I'm a little worried about that. Because I'm like, I remember what it was about, but I'm like, I don't know that I'll get into the zone where I actually feel like I know or give a damn about these characters.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, but it's so nice when you binge watch, because it's like, okay, you can keep up.
Yeah.
And sometimes the show greatly improves by binge watching, because you thought, wow, that was a crappy show and the arcs were so uneven, but they weren't. You just weren't remembering things. And so then when you watch them all together, you go, oh, it was me. You know, the show actually was put together halfway decent.
But there is a flip side to that. In certain shows, when you want to deal with something... long-standing, which could be a long-standing relationship, a slowly escalating rivalry, even just the tension of some sort of unanswered question over time period, the perceived time shifts a lot when you binge-watch versus when you not. I still don't remember what it was now, but when I showed Trish Babylon 5, there was something that I remember as being this long issue. We were like, oh my god, what's going to happen with this? And it went on for weeks, and it was huge. Turns out it was about 4 episodes. Mm. And when you're binge-watching it, they're like, why is everybody, I believe she said, she's like, why is everybody so freaked out about this? Not it was kind of a quick thing that happened. And I was like, well, you have to remember, when we're watching it originally, that was a month.
Well, Lost is the same way. I mean,
I'm sure.
One of the reasons I never got sucked into a whole bunch of stupid theories was because I binge watched the first two seasons. So it was like,
you weren't sitting around twiddling your thumbs about what happened in that one episode.
And of course, when there was a hiatus, there's even more time. So it was like, people are sitting around 4 weeks and they just can't stand it. They have to talk about it.
And I feel like people wrote to that style for a while. But I feel like there is an ever-growing contingent of television makers that are writing toward binge-watching.
Oh, yeah.
There are shows now that are written assuming most people are going to binge-watch.
Well, and the Netflix model is contributing to that, too, because they're just putting out the whole season.
And Amazon is really starting to step up their game with original programming.
Which I'm glad, because when you...
And even Hulu's trying stuff, and they're having a few things.
There's nothing worse than watching a show that you can tell is changing directions as they air. Yeah. Like, they ordered 4 shows, and then they retooled. And so when you watch the season, it's so terrible. It seems like Fringe did that.
Oh, hell yeah. Fringe did that at least twice.
So,
but they quite specifically did it in the beginning.
So creating an arc... that you know what the character arcs and the plot arcs are for the whole season, you put it all together and release it all at once. What I'm trying to say is, releasing it all at once forces you to do all that good storytelling work, and that's cool. Now the problem with comes though is that, you know, you're still doing it one season at a time. So when you know, you might paint yourself in a corner by the time you get to season 3 and you don't know what to do, and then you end up doing something stupid.
Well, except when you're not doing it one season at a time, what you have is a soap opera.
Right.
That's not the definition of soap opera, but I'm saying soap operas are things that have a show every day, 5 days a week, forever. And what I found interesting with those is back when I was watching them, when I was young, I would watch them with my mom and stuff like that. If I missed a couple episodes, I was completely lost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I missed 6 months of episodes,
didn't matter.
I could absolutely follow it.
Yeah, right.
It was kind of weird how much everything changed constantly, episode to episode, but nothing really changed, or at least very little. It's almost like it's a new genre or a new type of thing, like those film and television, but I feel like now binge, like season at a time television is a different creature in terms of what you do with it. Because we're talking about all these cool things you can do when you do it that way, but there's also cool things you can do as a weekly episode thing that you can't do on Netflix, really.
No, that's correct. But you had people doing it before. I mean, like Twin Peaks was probably pretty steadily and carefully mapped out and everything. It's just unusual to do because before Netflix and before video and before all that stuff, there was really only one way to do it. I mean, you kind of had to do it one show at a time. The soap opera model was kind of the baseline model.
This is the cutest thing ever.
And
Eddie's trying to climb up to Bug Twiglet, but he can't get quite up there. And Twiglet is very keenly aware and is very much acting like he's not aware.
And, you know, like you were saying, sitcoms were so episodic. I mean, you didn't have to know what happened last season. Nothing ever really called back, because that's just not what you did. It wasn't economical, really, even to do it like that. But thanks, I think, first and foremost, thanks to video. That's what really started it. But now it's really come into its own with this whole Netflix thing. You always had people who tried to do season at a time, and those shows usually were phenomenal.
And even longer than that. Yeah, the three big milestones, for me at least, in terms of that. First is Twin Peaks.
Yeah, right.
Second is Babylon 5.
Okay.
Because Babylon 5, I remember that at the time being like, this show actually has an overarching plot. And that actually was part of its problem. People didn't like the first season as much because it was very episodic, but it... it was leading to something and it didn't pay off for like literally a year. Mm. And so a lot of people watched first season, didn't like it, and then the diehards had to come back and say, you should start watching again from where you left off. Everything in the first season that we thought didn't matter actually matters. And then, of course, the third one, which is double-edged, is Lost. Lost totally did that, and then Lost totally didn't do that later. People got really mad about it. But I feel like, and Lost is the one that I think did it economically. Like, Lost is the one that made everyone else start doing it.
Well,
was that just a fake out?
The smart comic book TV shows are using comic book arcs. So it's all there.
So
they're doing it in a way, doing a season at a time, which makes them work even better. I just think it makes better TV. I mean, I don't, but you can't always do it. That's the thing. It's TV is a very, you know, a lot of people don't think about the business of TV in the way that TV is made.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can't be done any other way, and that's fine. Like The Simpsons, for example. I mean, you know, that's episodic, and that's the way it works, and that's great, you know, but...
But, and it's very self-aware of that.
Right.
It makes a point that it's, the show's been on for almost 30 years, and no one has aged.
Yeah. So...
Which bugs me, because I am now older than Homer Simpson. I do not like that feeling. British television had a lot more of this, and I liked that, but...
We like Blacklist all right. I don't know if it's something I'd say, hey, you got to watch this show, but...
Oh, terrible idea. There's more hissing. What, like it's a surprise? That's what was going to happen? Or are you just teaching him who's boss? That seems fair. All right. We really should have had something, or else this is going to be called The Magical Talking.
No. This is not for you. Come on.
He's just like me. He looks at you and he sees you as a ladder to get up to higher places.
Okay.
We're both wrong.
This is from Beth.
Beth. Nay Westlake. I don't remember what her last name is now. It's something weird in Italian, I think.
This is slightly digested, it looks like.
Oh. Abridged for our convenience. Beth does like to write a lot.
Dear Tony and William. Just wanted to let you know that I'm moving to Washington, D.C.
I wonder when she wrote this. Just wanted to let you know that I moved to Washington, D.C. 2 years ago.
I will keep listening to the podcast. Well, thank you, Beth, for doing that. But that's, I mean, that's, you know, if we didn't really do anything for the 200th episode, but if we have a 300th episode,
she
won't be able to join us like she did for the 100th.
That's true.
That's too bad.
Or she'll fly out here. She probably still.
But I'm glad she still intends to listen. That's nice.
That is good, and it's honestly just good to know that you're still listening, Beth, because we hadn't heard from you for a while. There's a lot of people we don't hear from nowadays. In my mind, there's like 5 listeners at this point. It's basically Coffee, Neuroduck, Stu, although he's a little late, Mark, although he's insanely late. And my boss.
And Beth, apparently.
And Beth. Those are the only people I know at this point.
And Jazz.
Oh, Jazz and Azurtone. I guess we've got at least like 8 listeners.
I wasn't counting.
I think Craig still listens. I hope Craig still listens. Haven't heard from him in a bit. Maybe we got a cool dozen somewhere in there. I don't know.
You think Sir Guido still listens?
I hope Sir Guido still listens. Oh my god, have I not talked about this? I found Blood Sparrow.
Oh.
I know nothing, but I know she's still alive.
Well, that's good.
I thought she actually tweeted something, and so I DM'd her. And apparently, it sounds like she's been going through some stuff, and that kind of made her fall away from everything.
That's too bad.
Don't know what it is. Didn't want to pry or anything. She's a podcast listener. Not like we're close. But Bloodsbear, if you do ever end up listening again or whatever, we hope you're doing good.
Yeah.
We hope things are better now.
Yeah.
And we hope things are better even if you're not listening. But Very antsy tonight. I wonder if it's because I turned off the air conditioning. Or it's probably because of you.
Probably because of me.
Anyway, oh, sorry. Beth, good luck in D.C.
Yes.
I personally have never been, but Trish has been a few times. I hear good things. I really hope you're not getting into politics. But otherwise, have fun.
You've never been to Washington, D.C.?
I've never been to Washington. I've been within a few hours of Washington, D.C., but I've never been to Washington, D.C. All right. Well, the hat indicates when a question has been abridged by putting a little asterisk in the corner of the card.
Yeah, like Beth's was?
Yes. The one I'm holding in my hand has four asterisks.
What's that supposed to mean?
That they wrote a novella? I don't know. Like,
I thought that's what all of the asterisks meant.
Yeah, we've never seen this before.
Yeah.
So it either means something completely different, or it means this one was insanely abridged.
Okay.
And it's from Azertown, so I'm inclined to think it's that one.
Okay.
Maybe four asterisks just means it's Azertown now. Who knows? Dear Hatless Ones and Grand Headless One. I almost like that.
I don't understand it.
That's why I say almost also, because what it's supposed to be is he's saying the Hatless Ones are you and I, because we're not supposed to be wearing hats. And the Headless One is the hat, because it doesn't have a head, it's just a hat.
I see.
But, as we all know, and I say we all, because y'all are listening, and you know, because it's come up here so many freaking times, Williams almost constantly has a hat on.
I pretty much always wear a hat here.
So we've got one no hat, one no head, and one with both. And three cats. Playing a weird game. Eddie keeps getting up on the little bench where Twiglet's laying. Just to like see what he can get away with. Which is nothing. But see, even now, he was just standing there. And Twiglet's like, rah, and he almost fell off. Alright. As exciting as that is, let's go to the four asterisked Azertown, Dear Hatless Ones and Grand Headless One. All Lexus drivers seem to be assholes. You think that's true?
Well, I'm certain it's not true.
No. But this is a favorite topic of mine.
What is?
Lexus asshole drivers and the cars they drive. No. The word. I really need to memorize the word because I reference it so much. That condition wherein humans find patterns where no patterns exist.
Hmm.
It's very closely tied to confirmational bias. But the prime example of that is always the one where people say, it seems like every time I look at the clock, it's this particular time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It's often a time that has significance to them. Nobody's ever like, every time I look at the clock, it says 3:37, which means nothing to me. No, it's always, it says 1, 2, 3, 4, or it says 9:11. Or, you know, it says whatever, which is my birthday.
Right.
And that's the thing. It's not that that happens more. It's that you don't pay a goddamn bit of attention to bother to remember when you looked at the clock and it said 3:37.
Right.
But this is another example. Statistically speaking, there's got to be somebody. I mean, it's entirely possible that all the are we starting a band here? What are we doing? Twiglet's back leg just had a seizure, and Addie's gonna like jump on him. I don't even know. My cats are weird people. Well, the climax is always kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah, with the cats.
Is that him purring?
I do not know.
I think it's Addie purring all the way down under the thing, and we can still. That's not a purr. Oh no, that's Twiglet growling. Okay. It's getting old, guys. Anyway, it's possible all the drivers that Azertown has dealt with that are assholes drive Lexus. Lexi. Because just statistically, you know, there's how many hundreds of millions of drivers out there? Maybe he's the one that only encounters the asshole Lexus. But more likely, deep in his heart, Azure Talon desperately wants to own a Lexus.
You think?
And he can't make it happen. Because when he goes to the Lexus dealer, they're like, get out.
Get out.
And he's like, but I want to buy it. And they're like, get. He's like, I have money. Whether that's true or not, he says he does. I'm like, it's not about money. Get. And like, what's it about? I'm not going to tell you. Get out. And then frequently security gets called. And so, which does beg the question, why didn't he ask, are all Lexus salespeople assholes? Because he's got a lot of evidence to back that one up. But, you know, he's taking it out on the drivers. But it's just misplaced envy. And you should, I mean, first you have to come to terms with it as your talent, accept it. And then, you know, maybe grow from the experience. Maybe an Infiniti. It's the Infiniti, sort of the poor man's Lexus.
Is it?
And I have no idea why the Lexus people won't sell to you, but hopefully the Infiniti people haven't heard of you. So it's fine.
So Lexus is a luxury car, right?
Quite, yes.
So if you're driving one, you probably make some money. There's a high probability, if that's the case, you also have status at your job or in your social circles or whatever. So could it be that there is an actual statistical correlation between Lexus driving and the kind of high status individual who is going to be really annoyed?
Is going to feel very self-entitled, is going to be very aggressive.
Right. That kind of thing. Is going to be annoyed by the equalizing effect of traffic. Yeah.
I think that is possible. Equally possible is that people like ourselves, people like Azure Talon, make the very assumptions you were just talking about of whoever they see driving a Lexus, and therefore sort of project that on there. So something that was minor that you might not have even noticed or given a second thought to of somebody driving a Ford, if they're driving a Lexus, you're like, oh, it figures those entitled assholes.
Or you'll just think something different about the person driving a Ford.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, haven't you noticed that all Ford drivers have a third arm just coming out the back of their head? Do you think that's true?
I think the plan worked.
Holy crap! No, except then, very short victory.
Yeah.
Addy managed to bug Twiggle enough that he left, and Addy took his spot for like a second and then followed after him.
Yep.
I'm telling you, I'm going to kill him, freaking kid, if he keeps me awake tonight again. That's it. We should end.
Okay.
So, what weird question did I ask you at the beginning of the episode?
I don't know.
I feel like that would have been a good title, but I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember you asking me a weird question. So,
something that amused me at the time.
Okay. I don't remember.
Excuse me. All right. And tune in next week when William will drive his flaming motorcycle through the hoop of ice, I guess.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.